Well, in case you missed it, I was on the Joe Rogan Experience just the other day. It was me, Jimmy Corsetti, and of course Joe. And we had a really good conversation. It lasted over 3 hours, and there's a link down below in the description, of course. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, holy crap, man. I did not even 2 years of making videos on this stuff, and here I am talking to Joe Rogan. It was amazing. And I'll just get this part out of the way. Right off the bat, the very first thing that Joe says in the video, here's how it starts.
Very nice to meet you, by the way.
Nice to meet you too, Joe.
And
thanks
thank
for.
you very much for that video. We talked about it before, but I want to say it publicly. The debunking of the debunking by Flint Dibble. And you really nailed him on so many of those things that he was dishonest about. And it just, I wish we knew in real time, but unfortunately, you know, it takes a lot of research to be able to figure out what he was telling the truth about and what he wasn't.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And as you can imagine, having Joe not only mention that Flint Dibble was kind of full of crap, but also basically straight up say, hey, go subscribe to Dan. That made me feel pretty good, man. I like that quite a bit. But there's a whole lot more that happened over the course of this. And, you know, you've got three people on there that are content creators. And there's a funny thing about YouTubers. We like to talk. So I didn't get to say everything that I wanted to say on there. So I'm gonna, well, you know, here's a few things that I wanted to say during the Joe Rogan Experience that I didn't get a chance to. Hi, my name is Dan, and welcome to Dunking. Now, throughout this video, basically, I'm going to show places in the discussion between Joe, Jim, and myself that I didn't get to say what I wanted to say, whether it was I didn't get to finish my thought or the conversation was carried away before I got to chime in with my two bits, whatever. So I'm going to go through a few times and basically finish my thoughts, right? But before I get going here, I want to say a couple of things because I know how the internet works. I've already seen the comments and I'm not very happy with them. All right, Jim invited me to the Joe Rogan Experience, okay? Joe invited Jim, and Jim invited me after making sure that Joe said it was okay. Now, Joe does know who I am, obviously. He already knew who I was and whatnot before that. But Jim was the one that facilitated me sitting in that chair that day. And we had discussed this stuff ahead of time. So the few people, and it's a very few people, all right? It's less than 10% of the people that have watched the video have complained about anything on Joe Rogan's video. I had numbers ran by a computer programmer even, and it was less than 10% of the comments were negative. And but the ones that were, as is usual, Jim gets maligned unfairly, and it's, oh, he's being mean to Dan and not letting him have enough airtime. Well, let me tell you really quickly a few things. Number one, Joe got me on there. That was his mic, right? Or excuse me, Jim got me on there. That was his mic. Number two, and he gave me extra time, right? Number two, we had a dis met several discussions before we went on there, and he told me flat out, he's like, dude, I get excited when I'm on Joe's show. You're gonna have to cut me off from time to time if you want to get a word in, and that's okay. I'm not gonna be upset, dude. You've got different things you want to say. If you got something to say, cut me off. And I told him then, and I'm telling you now. I told this, look. A lot of what I have to say is going to be piggybacking off of things that Jim was saying because, like, he's talking about Baalbek and how big these rocks are and stuff, and that's where I can pipe in and say, well, the Thunderstone was moved X, Y, and Z. It took this, and that we can compare that to these stones of Baalbek. But if I just start talking about the Thunderstone out of nowhere, it's nothing. So, quite frequently, I just let the conversation go where it went and then piped in when I had something important enough to say. And if you watch the conversation, you can see near the end that I start feeling like I need to say this, I need to say this, I need to say this. And I did exactly what me and Jim discussed beforehand, and I just fucking interrupted him, okay? So for the handful of you, and it is just a handful, but you guys are brr, the handful of you that are like, oh, Jim was just mean to Dan. No, he was fucking the opposite of mean to Dan. Jim was like pretty awesome to Dan. Thanks to Jim, I got to go sit and be on the Joe Rogan Experience. Okay. Having gotten that out of the way, let's go ahead and see the few times that I feel like I had some more to say than what I got to say.
Right here.
Another thing is
that's crazy.
Roman architecture always uses the most impressive things right in the front. You walk in the front of the thing, and that's where you're going to see the biggest stones, the most impressive, for obvious reasons. These are in the back, completely on the opposite end of the entrance. So you have to, like, from what you told me, you'd kind of have to look for them if you don't know where they're at, right? Like, you can't just show up on the site and they say, here's the Trilithon.
Well, let me tell you a quick story real quick. So I had the pleasure of going there with some people, and I'll tell you about it later. I won't do the name drop just yet. But Dory, who lives in Lebanon.
Well, not only is the Trilithon around the back and hard to see, but it's not symmetrical. And the Romans were very big on making their shit symmetrical. So I believe those three big rocks that are still in the ground that I said in the podcast, that, you know, the Romans, in my opinion, they somebody quarried them and then somebody else tasked to move them was just like, that's not going to happen. I believe those three rocks were meant to not just to like to be used to kind of match the other ones, but to exactly match as best as possible. They were going to try to make it symmetrical as is normal Roman operating procedure.
You wouldn't have the space to do it, and it's just ridiculous to suggest you would coordinate through 133 cranes around it. So what, this is what I'm trying to say, is that it's further suggestive evidence that the Romans didn't build it because they didn't have the capability to lift stones of that mass.
Yeah, it's still pretty fascinating the Romans were able to build a crane that could lift 6 tons.
That's amazing.
But not enough to even lift the stones that were inside the king's chamber.
Mm. Right? So let me put this into perspective. So the largest stones in...
Well, they certainly would have had the manpower. The Romans had tons of people. But Jim's right. They wouldn't have had the space. And the fact of the matter is, we have 3 stones in the wall at Baalbek and 3 stones in the ground. The 3 stones in the ground with those different measurements that do show they were made by Romans, and the 3 stones in the wall that show measurements that don't look like Roman measurements. This is something that keeps, like, when you use the Occam's razor argument and say, well, it was probably Romans. Well, you know, a skeptic would say, it's most likely the Romans that did it. You have to, like, keep in mind that we don't have any idea as to how they would have done it. We don't have, the only touchstone that we have for that, pun intended, shows that they would have needed that advanced metallurgy. So I kind of wanted, when I was on the thing, I wanted to kind of beat that point into the ground here.
I have not found an answer on why he was looking for the Ark of the Covenant. He was looking for Thor's hammer and the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
And the thing is to me, I'm like, I don't – what did – I feel like there's something that they knew about ancient history that we don't. I don't know if this is true or not, but I want – I feel like I can't find a straight answer. And then,
well, it seems to me that a lot of it just comes from kind of a belief in the supernatural. I mean, that time in German history, you know, their society was being kind of turned on its ear. They were going from one vision of culture to another, and things that were old were, you know, something like Thor's hammer, for example, may well have been mocked a generation before, but it now was something being looked at in a new light. And some people like Himmler were pretty like full on insane and put into positions of power. So, I'm not saying that there's nothing to that they didn't have any like secret knowledge that we didn't have. It would kind of be stupid to think that they didn't if you think about it. If they were honestly looking into hidden secrets from ancient history, a fucking government would have access to things that YouTubers today probably wouldn't have access to, right? So that on that respect, I have to agree with Jim that there was probably something to, they probably did have some lead, some tidbit that we don't know about. There was something that was inspiring them that we aren't aware of. However, I would think personally that would be most likely be a product of their culture just shifting and turning on its ear, and people being allowed to just kind of go where they want to go with things. And you know, people like to just grab funding when funding's available. So I think, you know, hey man, let's go find Thor's hammer. You know, if it sells, it sells, right? So anyway, that's what I think about that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
I want to know why he was looking for the Ark of the Covenant.
Well, obviously, their engineering was...
Well, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he was after the Ark of the Covenant because it was like a thing that would basically make them the chosen people, right? The Jews were supposed to be the chosen people, and this would make Hitler's people, like, if you had this Ark and you could, like, this would be getting... the stamp of approval from Yahweh himself. So I could be wrong on that one, but I know that Hitler was a little goofy, but he was like somewhat Christian in his goofiness. So that would have been my guess.
The point is there's something particularly disgusting to us about that one genocide, and it's really interesting. And you know, you wonder like how long it's going to take. I mean, Dan Carlin has talked about this in depth, because he talks about the Mongols and that it's so far in the past. You know, we're talking about like 1200 AD. It's so far in the past that we look at it with almost like an objective perspective instead of a moral perspective.
Well, like I'm going to mention here in a minute, it does have a lot to do with living memory. It's like even if it's been 500 years, if your great-great-grandma and she told your great-grandma and she told your grandma who told your mom who told you about how terrible those Mongols were, well, that would be a different set of circumstances than a history book informing you that the Mongols were terrible, right? That's a whole different ball of wax. And that's really what we have with a lot of these different situations, but specifically Germany and World War II. I mean, my God, that wasn't just a little while ago. I mean, my grandfather, for example, saw the Nuremberg trials. Now, he didn't see all of them, but he was over in Germany as part of the occupying force during the Nuremberg trials, right? So there's a touchstone in my life. So this is the kind of thing that it's a little bit different in that regards when it's so common to the people as opposed to being something just in a history book.
The bikers, the Hell's Angels rocked Nazi memorabilia. He asked the guy, why don't you? And he's like, because my dad fought the Nazis and he fucking hates this. So I wear this to piss off my dad.
A lot of that is contrarians.
But my point is that, you know, he wouldn't, a Genghis Khan symbol wouldn't be doing any good. Right.
Right.
This has an emotional attachment. Genghis Khan's mustache would be fine on me. Right. People might laugh at me a little bit, but
I don't even know what it looked like.
I can see a picture. They don't know what he looks like. Yeah,
we don't know.
It's the
Nazi thing. The fact that it's so horrific. It just like puts anyone who has anything to say that's coloring outside the lines, you get labeled the Holocaust denier. Yeah.
Well, like you can see there, I did mention a little bit about it being a touchstone, you know, to a modern time, but I didn't really get to hammer that point home like I did a second ago. But what I want to mention here and now is that the reason that that Holocaust in particular was so horrific to your average Joe today is that it was mechanized. That is one of the things that makes it so, like, inhuman. It is like humans making a machine to destroy humans is grotesque on a weird, scary level. Right, you start thinking about like a factory that's all set up to manufacture things, and like Henry Ford back in the day coming up with the assembly line and things like that. And it's like, okay, we minds put to work on all this stuff, and then you think about them doing that with the, you know, if I just did the X, Y, and Z, we could kill another 500 people an hour. It's fucking gross, man. It's really, really gross, and it does. It's like, it almost puts you into uncanny valley where you're almost not looking at humanity anymore. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're so fascinated with it.
But it gets even worse when you look at it, what they get, like this hate for Graham Hancock, in particular Graham Hancock. That makes it where it's like you can't trust a damn word that comes out of their mouth when they're discussing. Like if we were talking back to the martial arts, you know, one of the things that came out was Aikido was just ass. It's no good at all for like man-to-man combat. It's what was it for like samurais that had been knocked off a horse or some shit?
Well, it was designed to redistribute the energy of your attacker.
Okay.
So if someone's coming at you with a sword, if you don't have a sword and a guy swings a sword and you're fast enough to get away from the path of the sword and grab the guy's arm or body and manipulate him to the ground to remove his sword, it's essentially a disarming
Okay, so it's not the best thing in the world.
It just doesn't work against a wrestler.
Okay,
like,
so now wrestling
is way better. And now, wrestling is the if you want to find out the best way to take a person to the ground and control them, we 100% know it's wrestling.
Yeah, you just grab
the most ancient sport in the world that dates back to the Sumerians.
And by the way, wrestling, I include judo. I include different forms of jiu-jitsu that were ancient. Because these allowed people to manipulate limbs and to control joints, which allowed them also to take people down and submit them. But the point is, you had a bunch of people believing that this one goofy ass martial art was the end all be all because of a good Steven Seagal movie.
Exactly. And what my point was there is, it's like you're considered pretty much an expert in martial arts. You're not like you're a professional announcer for UFC. You know your shit. So if I watched you say Steven Seagal, his martial arts, it's fucking Aikido, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, but I would not do that. Well, I would tell you Steven Seagal was really good.
Yeah.
Really good at Aikido.
But if you hated Steven Seagal, if you were one of his many haters, you could just attack Aikido without ever saying his name and just be digging him a ditch, right? You could just be burying him without ever mentioning Steven Seagal's name. You could just attack Aikido. Aikido is a shit martial art. It's not effective. It's not very good. And then by extension, you're making Steven Seagal look bad. And this is one of their favorite tactics to do to Hancock. They will attack. This idea is racist. It's inherently bullshit. They don't have to mention Hancock's name. Now it's just they just glue the two. They're so insidious this way.
Well, as you can see there, I did eventually get my whole thought out, but it was a little clunky because, it's kind of funny. I planned this metaphor. I'm like, okay, if I use some empathy and think about this, Joe's into martial arts, and if I use this metaphor to make a point, and I know Steven Seagal's situation, and I know that Aikido is like considered not the best martial arts for UFC stuff, and I'm thinking this will be a great metaphor. But what I didn't anticipate was Joe's love for martial arts. And he's like, fuck, we're talking UFC. Well, buddy, let me tell you something about Aikido. So basically, the reason that I wanted to bring that up was because they do this kind of thing a lot with Hancock, not just with the racism stuff, but they do it with a lot of other things too, where they try to tie it in with the lack of trust in the medical community. They try to tie it in to people storming the White House. They try to tie it into Sandy Hook, for fuck's sake. They doesn't matter what, okay? So this is why I was bringing that up, and I didn't get to really kind of hammer the point home so much because Joe made sure that I was well-versed in Aikido and his position on Steven Seagal before we were done with that. And honestly, I can't blame him. That's a little bit of my fault. I do love psychology, and I tried to think about this empathetically and how to weave my way into that. And, I did not anticipate how much he fucking loves that stuff. What do you do?
I can weigh in on that real quick. And also, the mystery plays. That site is probably the second most popular place on the planet with people like ourselves. And the more mystery is there, the more money it's the more like, we deal in mystery. So if they excavate everything and we know everything there is about that site and it's all super mundane and there's nothing cool about it anymore, that tit dries up and there's no milk
coming
out.
Yeah, but how could it ever stop being cool?
I agree.
It doesn't
make
any sense.
I agree with that. But
that one doesn't make any sense.
That's a Zahi Hawass kind of thing. He's of the same opinion where I think a lot of the same things, happen in Egypt for the same reason. Zahi Hawass is quoted with saying that those New Age people, it doesn't matter what happens in Egypt, the New Age people, they come. It's about tourism. Ever since the Arab Spring, tourism in Egypt's been lower. So I think a lot of the same, we're going to talk in a minute about the hidden chamber in the pyramid that they've located and still haven't excavated for whatever fucking reason. I think that might be part of it. If you want to get super mundane and not conspiratorial, it's just a simple, the tourists keep coming while there's a mystery there. As soon as we open that up, it's just an empty chamber.
I don't buy that.
Me
I think
either.
The mystery of the structures themselves that we have completely excavated is just so fascinating.
No, I understand Joe saying that he doesn't really think that makes sense, because it doesn't take the interest out of the place for a guy like Joe or for a guy like myself. But a couple of things. Number one, the people that run these places, generally speaking, aren't into alternate history. They're into ancient history. So a lot of times they don't really fathom where we're coming from, right? So they're liable to just try to make sure that the New Agers keep coming, as the Zahi Hawasses of the world. And another thing, the second point that I think is a little bit more important, and I wish I would have made it on the podcast, because this one I would have interrupted for, but I thought of it, and when it was time to say it again, I didn't get a chance. But if they find a body in that in the Great Pyramid, in that hidden chamber, right? If they find a body in there, and all of a sudden the pyramid is a tomb, that will potentially damage the people that come there looking for the pyramid to be technology or a spiritual machine or something like that, right? Now, you might not think that's the case. You might think, oh, no, it'd still be cool that way. But I hope that you can understand how somebody who's tasked with making money off of that site would think that way, right? So anyway, I'm not saying that that is the reason. I'm just saying that I feel like it got a little bit overly dismissed there, and I wanted to make sure and flesh it out a bit.
The bag thing is very fascinating.
It is. It's hotly debated.
I'm sure. You could say maybe it's a tool bag. You could say maybe it's psychedelics he's got in that bag. You know,
academics say it's just water.
Water.
It's a water bucket.
Wow. You guys familiar with the work of Martin Sweatman?
Excuse me?
You guys familiar with the work of Martin Sweatman?
Yeah.
No, I am not.
He's the one that he was on Ancient Apocalypse Season 1 for a minute. He's the guy who's the made basically a star map of that Pillar 43. And in his opinion, those three handbags at the top were three sunrises.
Mm.
And if that's the case, that would almost make sense, because then a picture of an Assyrian holding that would be like holding of astronomical knowledge. Like this symbol could have been a symbol of knowledge of astronomy,
right.
Which is one thing, honestly, about Göbekli Tepe. Could have been a book
right?
bag.
Right? I mean, it kind of makes sense. They probably had to travel around with their books.
So here's the thing.
No, what I was going to say there is that the Göbekli Tepe is one place in the region of a handful that have like some seriously what appears to be very robust astronomical symbolism. So it's not just this handful of things there. And it makes me want to see more of that site as well. Every one of those pillars, in my opinion, is a treasure trove of knowledge that we really need to have, in my opinion, for us to like suss what happened there, right? Like, we don't need to have it to fix world hunger or anything, but if we're going to suss what the fuck happened out in Göbekli Tepe or in prehistory and stuff, I think that there's a very high chance that there is a lot of information there and that we need to access those pillars. But we won't ever be doing that anytime soon, like Jim points out.
Dr. Martin Sweatman, his first paper on Göbekli Tepe's Pillar 43, he's got Scorpio in the bottom. He believes that's Sagittarius, that's the sun.
Mm.
And if that's one, basically it's a star map denoting the time that the comet smacked the Earth is what he believes. Each one of those Vs. His latest paper on it, each one of those V symbols is a day. Each one, in his opinion, each one of those boxes is a month. And there is basically a full year denoting the whole thing, the way he's broke. That's very interesting stuff. And one of the things that's wild to me, when we talk about like the lack of further excavations, is almost every pillar we bring up has new symbology, new symbols, new iconography. If we're trying to find some sort of ancient proto-language or something, we need more symbols. We need more things on Earth.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's completely opposed by the mainstream archaeology. The idea that these guys had any sort of written language is fucking ridiculous.
And
but
what are the theories involved in, you know, I know it's been theorized that it was purposely covered.
Now, the thing that I was about to bring up here before we changed directions was that Jimmy brought up, hey, we should be excavating at Göbekli Tepe, and we're not. And the reaction from guys like John Hoops was, hey, we should just encase the site in concrete. We've got enough for us archaeologists to study, and a visitor center would be just fine. Well, not only was that really bad PR, but dude, that... What I wanted to tell Joe was that, honestly, if this was me, man, if I was in that position, if I had the power that Jimmy has with archaeologists there, I wouldn't be saying this. I would just be doing it and then eventually just laugh and then show you guys. Jim could go around and advocate for all these different sites and get these guys to argue against doing archaeology. He could practically kill the field of archaeology inside of a year by saying, you know what? We need to excavate the Parthenon. You know what? We need to excavate more over at the Colosseum. How come they haven't excavated more over at the Colosseum? And if Jim went and made posts like that archaeologists would knee-jerk into saying, we've done plenty of work at the Colosseum, and next thing you know, the guys that are working at the Colosseum get defunded. It would be hilarious, right? And that's the kind of power that these dumb shits hand to just some rando on YouTube because they hate him that much. I wanted to make sure that Joe heard that, so I'll tag him when I make this video. So I hope you get this far in the video, Joe.
You remember how the Northern Lights were visible as far south as Mexico recently in the last few months?
That was from solar activity, right? Yeah.
Right. But the reason why it's more visible now is because the Earth's shields are diminishing.
Mm.
This isn't like from Bob's website. This is mainstream science.
Well, the thing I would have liked to have piped up and said there was that I'm not 100% sure that the reason that the Aurora Borealis is more visible is because the fields are weaker. I think the fields are weaker because the sun pounds the Van Allen belt, and that creates stronger Aurora Borealis. At the same time, it weakens it. So the stronger Northern Lights and weaker Van Allen belt correlate, but they don't. It's not a cause and effect. Now, again, I could be wrong about that. I studied this shit like decades ago, right? Like a couple decades ago. I'm an old man, right? And Jim's obviously like reading modern stuff, and he said it's not from Bob's website. So the thing is, I would have said this in real time, right? I'm doing this video without doing research, without scripting it, as you can see. This is basically real time. Like, this is what it would have been like if I was on Joe Rogan and just got to say whatever the fuck I wanted. Jim, Joe, shut your fucking cake holes. Dan's talking. This is what you would have got. Aren't you glad they didn't shut their fucking cake holes?
We could see it on TikTok. You watch a nurse come out there, and she's going to do her little TikTok, and you can just look. Is that a donkey next to her name or an elephant? If it's an elephant, she's going to tell you there's nobody in this hospital. It's fucking empty. If it's a donkey, she's going to tell you about the body outside, a machine outside making corpse starch out of the fucking dead people that they can't bury them as fast as they're dying. It was so openly easily for the average Joe could look right through it, could just see if this is just an argument between the two parties, isn't it? And they're just transferred this to the medical problem.
Well, you remember in the beginning days of the pandemic when they were really fear mongering, when they gave a preposterous number of people that were going to die from COVID?
Yes.
And what was the percentage at the high?
And the place I wanted to take that next was to point out they laid that at Graham Hancock's feet. All the problems with the medical community, they blamed on Graham. The Society for American Archaeology wrote a letter to Netflix back in 2022 trying to get Ancient Apocalypse reclassified from a documentary series to a fiction series. Now, in addition to saying, oh, Graham's a racist and what's not saying that he is, but they also point out that, well, in 2020, the faith in the medical community was up here, and now in 2022, it's down here, and we're not saying that Graham Hancock did that either, but my Graham Hancock, it was absolutely grotesque. And that's what I was trying to get across with the point that I was making there. That they basically don't give any shits whatsoever, any problem with the scientific community whatsoever having faith. They're just going to loosely connect it to Graham and then lay it at his feet. It's absurd.
I think we have these... Those people, the leftists or whatever you want to call them, the Flint Dibbles of the fucking world, these guys are, they like we're talking about with climate change and everything else, they don't want to leave anything in there that could let the other side have anything. They assume that the average rank and file Joe public is dumb as hell.
Right.
One of the things they'll always say about Ancient Apocalypse, complain about, they'll be like, well, he goes on there and he talks shit about archaeologists and everybody's going to believe everything he says because it's so well made. It's like, man.
He didn't do that at all.
And in the first season, he did talk a little shit about archaeologists. But the bottom, to me, if I'm watching anything, I don't care what it is, if the person says, you know, the mainstream scientists disagree with me here, but here's what I have to say, all my alarm bells go off, and that tells me I cannot hang my hat on what this motherfucker's saying. I got to go Google it, right? That's what Graham does over and over again. Mainstream archaeologists disagree with me. So for them to say everybody in the world is just going to believe this, it's nuts.
So it's 3.4%. So this is it. So give me some.
Well, I pretty much got the point out there, but at the end of it there, I was trying to get across that It is kind of absurd to assume that most people that watch a show like Ancient Apocalypse or Ancient Aliens or any of that stuff are going to be thinking that the person that they're seeing is 100% accurate and portraying the truth. That, you know, some people feel that way, and that's true. But by and large, anybody who's the least bit skeptical, as soon as they hear, like I said, the mainstream scientists don't agree with me, they're gonna know they need to look into that. And they compare this with, like, they say, well, you know, we have a hard time convincing people, and it's like they have like academic authority, right? They have like the ability to say we are experts in this field, right? They should have the public's faith and trust, but if they don't, they're blaming Graham Hancock for that. And the reality of it is, I mean, you're looking at my channel right now. The reason my channel's succeeding is because I'm easily able to point out where certain individual scientists are so full of shit that I would trust the words coming out of the person sitting out front of Walmart holding the bucket asking for change as much as I would trust the words coming out of these guys' mouth. It's absurd. It's full of shit. It's so clearly full of shit.
If they really did find giant bones, which I'm skeptical of, but if they did, this is probably an advertisement to sell them while they're traveling these things across the country. Oh, you know, just happened to lose them along the way because this dude came over and bought them. This has been a problem since day one. And
especially when you think about those kind of like
one-offs.
Crazy old school Rockefeller type billionaires.
Yes. Yeah.
Who really love to control information and everything.
You know,
if you have access to something that's just undeniably throws the whole timeline into a question or throws a narrative of human beings into a question.
Now you got some power with that little artifact, don't you? So I'm of the opinion that that's been a problem. Like, I don't believe in the Dendera light. I assume you know what the Dendera light
is,
right?
Well, you glossed over the Antikythera. How do you say it?
The Antikythera mechanism? Antikythera.
No, the Dendera light is the interpretation that a lot of people give to this hieroglyph right here that they believe that it's showing the ancient Egyptians using electricity and a light bulb to illuminate a room. Now, that part of the Temple of Hathor was like, this inscription was found in the Temple of Hathor, and it was kind of sealed off. Not kind of, it was sealed off. And when it was opened up, this stuff had not been seen for a very long time. So if you imagine that maybe a Dendera light was there, if the Dendera light interpretation's accurate and they opened up that place and there's a whatever's left over of a machine that's been sitting there for thousands of years rotten and fallen to hell, but there's some broken glass and there's some copper and there's some, you know, there's a little bit of a light fixture housing left over and whatnot and leftover remnants of a cord. That's the kind of thing that would end up in private hands, like, immediately. It's the first light bulb. What does the first freaking superhero comic book go for, right? What's the first Harley Davidson go for compared to the second? It's the first of anything. So you all of a sudden, you have the first light bulb. It's going to be through the fucking roof. So if there was a Dendera light, it almost certainly was sold on the black market as soon as that area was opened up. That's what I was trying to hammer at there.
All over the world.
The lava tubes, there's all kinds of places in South America where they have a big pyramid built on top of a spring. The lava tube could have been a cave that was sacred that they just kept embellishing and kept embellishing and kept embellishing, saying it's just a lava tube, not a man-made tunnel down there as a non sequitur. Anybody who knows anything about ancient history could understand how a sacred site could have a pyramid built on top
of it.
Let's
take a bathroom break.
Absolutely. Yes.
Come back.
Awesome.
Okay, so where were we? We were...
Well, we're about the lack of excavations at Gunung Penang.
Yeah.
And this should segue into something that's very, very interesting, which is the Great Pyramid.
It's a very common tactic used against Graham Hancock is to point out that this site, well, is probably natural. You'll see this used against other people, too, against Jimmy Corsetti himself when he starts bringing up the reshot structure. Oh, well, that's just a geological formation. Well, so fucking what? So is a cave. You ever heard of cave people? I mean, come on, man. Just because a site is natural doesn't mean that people wouldn't put it to use, consider it sacred, and embellish around it. I mean, this is such a no-brainer take on it. It's when people use that kind of argument to argue against this stuff, it's so fundamentally flawed that you wonder why they're even talking about this stuff to begin with. Because they obviously don't know anything about it, or they're happy to misrepresent it, one of the two.
Even if it's a completely empty room and nothing else, we still would have learned something new. Right. In fact, I've joked to other people that, like, hey, they could turn this into a pay-per-view event. I bet you 100 million people like around the world.
I was just thinking it.
Yeah, I know. But even if there's nothing in it, it's still a win because we will learn something new.
Yeah.
And it is.
No, I got to give huge props to the handful of you who got my reference there. I mean, that was like Gilmore Girls level of pop culture reference of obscurity, right? And a lot of you actually did get it. It made me laugh my butt off. But for those of you who didn't...
The world watched in amazement as he unlocked the mysteries of Al Capone's glove compartment.
Uh-huh! Road maps!
What I mentioned about PewDiePie earlier, if you remember about 10 years ago, the Adpocalypse, that was, I think it was actually a Wall Street Journal article, but it was a legacy media that wrote about PewDiePie, and they fucking, like, threw him under the bus. They, like, misconstrued him and everything else, and the effects were very real. It slapped YouTube content creators across the board. If you look up Adpocalypse, you can read all about it.
Well, they've actually dropped some of the bans on X now, which is great.
Yeah. Now, for those of you who aren't aware of the Adpocalypse, PewDiePie decided to dress up in some uniforms from, like, the Angry Windmill Boys from the German days, and he did it on his channel making a joke, saying, some people are going to just misconstrue me and call me this anyway, so here you go, guys, go ahead and use this out of context. So who fucking used it out of context? Oh, the Wall Street Journal. And they used it to make a hit piece to attack ad revenue on YouTube. And what I was trying to get across there that I felt was the important part that I didn't get a chance to get off in the podcast there was that this was a kind of like a coordinated hit piece by legacy media against like YouTubers and stuff, right? And it crushed a lot of people. It didn't just crush the YouTube sphere. In general, there were certain individuals that were just like completely destroyed. Like one guy like tested a bunch of firearms and stuff, and he would test what kinds of Kevlar could handle what kinds of knives and stuff, and that was considered like how to injure a police officer and all this shit. It was just all fucked up, and all kinds of people got thrown under the bus, and it was just legacy media. We'll probably see a few more before they're completely gone, but it was one of their knee jerks as they're, you know, circling the tube and, you know, or it's tub and the drain. That's where they're circling the drain. This is why I don't work for legacy media. All those wasted words right there that have fired my ass yesterday.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You can see the same pattern of attack that they throw at Trump being used against Tulsi Gabbard the last time around when she fucking nailed Kamala in the debate. And she was just like, you can stand here and say all cops are bad, but you got hundreds of thousands of people in jail and prison.
Leftist viewers deal NBC, CNN, a Trump slump ratings crash.
All right. The last point, I wouldn't even make this, but I was in the middle of making it, and Jamie brought up what Joe wanted to see, and so we talked about that, and we never went back to it. In the 2020 election cycle, Tulsi Gabbard and Kamala Harris were in the DNC, one of the primary debates, and Tulsi just annihilated her with just like holding her feet to the fire going, you know, it's really hard for you to be like holding up all this all cops are bad stuff while you're turning around and you got like hundreds of thousands of dudes in California that are there for like marijuana crimes that are in jail for marijuana crimes under you and you ain't done nothing about it. And Tulsi just annihilated her. And the DNC, man, holy shit, dude. They turned around on and threw her under the bus. Next thing you know, Tulsi Gabbard's a Russian plant. And that was the one that just got me. It's like, wait a minute, Russian plant? Because of the same shit they were doing to Trump, right? Oh, yeah, he's a Russian plant. And now, I don't know if either of them are Russian plants, but you know what? It's awfully funny that it comes out as soon as they piss off the DNC. And that's when they become Russian plants. And so that's what I was trying to get across there. As you guys know, I'm not big into the political stuff and almost would rather not even mention this, but I do like Tulsi, even though she's kind of jumped more, she's kind of lost some of the impartiality that made me like her to begin with. I can't really blame her. She did get kind of like punched in the face for no good reason. But anyway, that's the end of all that. That's what I had to say about politics and stuff. Get out of that fucking sphere and back into big rocks where I belong. Anyway, I appreciate you guys watching this far. You know, I did really have a great time on that thing. And again, I want to thank Jim and Joe both. I want to thank Jim because, like, I know that I was on Joe's radar. I'm pretty sure that it's not to toot my own horn, but I'm pretty sure at some point that he would have had me on. He doesn't follow a lot of people, and he's been following me for a few months now. So I assumed that I was going to be on at some point. Was kind of like biding my time and crossing my fingers. But Jim expedited that. Jim made it happen. And, you know, he did it on his own time. He could have sat down and stole all of that time for himself, and it wouldn't have been stealing. I use that term because so many people have been just like hard on him, like I've said. I understand that a lot of people in this community, there's infighting and this person doesn't like that person. I get it. There's people that I don't fucking like way more than you would think based on where we're at on our beliefs on Big Rocks. But I get along really good with Jim, all right? We communicate well with each other. We knew where we were at going into this podcast. So there were a couple of times that I didn't get to say what I wanted to say, but it isn't because of Jim or Joe or Jamie even. It's just the way the fucking conversation flows. Again, you've got three goddamn YouTubers in a room, okay? All three people love to talk. We've all got plenty of things to say, and we're all sitting there to the point where even in 3 hours, if Joe didn't have more shit to run off and do, we would have sat there and talked for 6 hours. That's the kind of people we are, okay? So it's no surprise that I didn't get what I wanted to get out completely. And those handful of people that are going to try to weaponize this to say that Jimmy Corsetti, blah, blah, blah. Again, he brought me there. There's a good chance that you're watching me right now because Jimmy brought me to that. And that was a good thing, not a bad thing. Fuck, I can't believe I have to explain these things so, like, base to some people. Most of you get it, especially if you're watching this channel. Most of you get it because I do have a little bit of a I tend to look at things from all perspectives as much as I possibly can. I mean, I'm not a complete genius, but I'm, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm about an 84. But anyway, I really want to appreciate everyone for watching this far. Thank you so much for the people that have been watching me for a long time. Thanks for the support that got me here. I mean, holy crap. And for the people that are new, the many of you that are new, thank you very much. I hope this answered some of the questions as to what you thought I was getting ready to say. Hope you've enjoyed some of my backlog. Hope the audio is a little better here. I keep trying to upgrade my equipment. I need to buy a damn new PC is what I need to get down and do. A new MacBook, excuse me. Anyway, I'm going to be speaking at the Cosmic Summit this summer. There's a link down below to that. Make sure and check all that out. There's going to be a lot of other people in the community there, and it's supposed to be a really fun thing. This will be my first year there. So you might want to check that out. Matt Bell's going to be there, and he's a pimp as far as I'm concerned. There's going to be a lot of other guys there, too. Anyway, there's links to support the channel down below. Thank you very much. Don't forget to do Fortnite dances for your kids before you put them to bed. Like and subscribe. Don't be mean to anybody on the internet, even if they are an archaeologist. And happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you next time.